When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Memorial Day weekend. Fabulous to have a couple of days off. So glad to be with you. So glad my cold of 3 weeks is finally gone, and I pretty well almost completely gone. But at least I have my voice back, all to the positive. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. First order of business, the intentional investor, how to be wildly successful in real estate. So last week, we just had an hour-long show because of the debate. And I went on the air and I talked about how this is the beginning of the end of the best time to invest in real estate that I think will happen in our lifetimes. I don't see the world colliding in a way that it did in 2000, and it really started in 2003 with the huge run-up in prices, right? And then it came crashing down in 2007 and 2008 and 2009. And for a whole lot of reasons that we have discussed ad nauseum over the last few years, it didn't get better. And in many cases, it still isn't better yet. But it's starting slowly to claw the way back. And what we're seeing around the country is that real estate prices are going up because there really is a lack of demand. There just aren't enough homes on the market. And there are a whole bunch of reasons for that, right? So when you look at what's going on in Georgia, which in many ways became ground zero for foreclosures, right? First, we had Las Vegas and Phoenix and Tucson, parts of California, the entire state of Michigan, the city of Chicago, right? And then Florida. And there was Georgia. And in a lot of those other places, things have gotten a lot better. In Georgia, it's gotten a lot better. Home prices have really gone up quite a lot over the last couple of years. But there are so many homes that are still for sale. And there are so much inventory in the foreclosure market that's still coming online. Banks, and we're seeing the overall numbers go down, but the banks are starting to take back more homes that people just haven't been paying on for years and years and years. We've seen, for a number of reasons, the money in private equity and hedge funds who've been buying huge tracts of single-family houses and rental buildings. We've seen those get bought, and that's done, and that money is pretty much out of the game now. And so it opens up a window for the individual investor to come in and start to make a move. And so last week, I decided to really open up the doors of knowledge, because you know how I feel. If you are informed, if you know who to go to, if you know how to choose the very best people for your team, you're going to have a winning team. You're going to make money in real estate. And I wanted to give you the gift of knowledge with my intentional investor series, how to be wildly successful in real estate. And so last week, I just priced it at 80% off. 80%. That is not, you did not hear me misspeak. It normally goes for around $360 for the 9 videos and 9 ebook series, and I marked it down 80%. So for $75 at thinkglinkstore.com, just use the code word buy now, you could go and do it. And about 60 of you did it. I set aside over 100 of these, and 60 of you bought it, and I've been getting thank you notes from people who've been watching the series all week, and so I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled to know it's already working. And I asked for some people to call into the show with their success stories in investing in real estate, and we had a whole bunch of people call in last week, which was just really gratifying, right? It's really nice for me to know that the information that I'm giving you, and I have no hand in the game here. It's not like every house you buy, I make money. What I'm thrilled about is that you're making money, that you're buying in a smart, intentional way. I really believe in this idea that you have to be intentional about the investments you make. If you're not intentional, if you don't go into it understanding what you need to do, how you're going to do it, having a process, understanding what to look for in making the smart decisions, you're never going to get it done. And so I named the series The Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate, because I know that if you buy with intent, you are much more likely to be able to make it work than if you just go out willy-nilly and buy something, right? Sometimes you get lucky. We, Sam and I, when we bought our first, it wasn't our first, but it was a property in downtown Chicago about 15, 16 years ago, and we decided that we needed a place for Sam to have his office downtown. He wanted to be close to, you know, he does a lot of closings, right? He's a real estate attorney. And so we found this place. It was a condo. He works alone. He didn't really need an office. So we bought this condo. We went and we told my mother about it because we were renovating our house. We were living with her at the time. This is clearly a family thing since my sister just finished a 4-month stint of living with us while she was renovating her house. And she said, oh, well, maybe I'll buy one too. Okay, that is not what an intentional investor does. Sam and I had really clearly thought out what we needed, what we were doing, and how it was going to happen, and we went home and told my mother, and she figured that we had done all of the hard work, and so she could just piggyback on it and buy something. And she did. And it really worked up to a point, because we had done the research, and we knew what we were getting. So she bought a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo in a place. We bought a 1-bedroom, which is all we needed and could afford at the time. And so what happened was really interesting. We lived there. We paid her rent for it, and our place wasn't done yet, so we used hers as the kind of joint offices while we were, whatever, living with her. Anyway, at the end of the time when our house was ready to be moved back into, Sam's condo, 1-bedroom condo, was ready, and so we moved into that for his office, and the 2-bedroom one was empty, and we said to Mom, this is fantastic. Prices have really jumped up, and you should just rent that out. Now, remember, my mother has been, for 31 years, one of the leading real estate agents in the city of Chicago. She's pretty much retired now. She still does a few odd deals here or there for friends. But at this point in time, she was doing 40, 50 deals a year. She was selling $25, $30 million of real estate a year. I mean, she was no slouch in the market. I mean, she was out there doing it. And yet, the idea that she would rent out this place completely freaked her out. She had no idea of what it would take to be a landlord. And when she actually thought about the reality of it, it was one thing for her kids to live there and pay her some rent. It was another thing to have to actually get those people out, us, right? And then move other people in and start to think about it. And how would she collect the rent and this and that? And it was too overwhelming. And so she decided to sell. So she sold the place and she made some money, which was great. And about 2 years later, it had doubled again in value. And she basically left $200,000 sitting on the table. And the reason for that is she didn't have a plan. She wasn't intentional about the investment, this real estate investment that she was making. She got lucky. She could have gotten extraordinarily lucky. And so it goes. So the reason that I call the series The Intentional Investor is I want you to be intentional. I want you, if you want to buy real estate, if you want to invest, or even if you're just buying for yourself and you want to make a smart move for your primary residence, if you've learned nothing over these 15 years that I've been on the radio, I am all about intent. I want you to understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're going to do it, how you could do it better, and who you need to pull it off. That's it. That's the whole magic behind it. Anyway, to get back to the original point, I want to just say a big thank you to everybody who bought The Intentional Investor, and I hope it works for you, and I hope you'll send me lots of emails and letters telling me how it's working. And for everybody else who missed it last week, because I was only on for an hour, and it was kind of crazy after the governor's debate. Was it governor's debate? I can't remember. Senate debate. I'm still going to offer this at the 80% discount this week. And so go to thinklinkstore.com, sign up by just using the code buy now, and you will be able to buy my Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate series for 80% off. This is the last week we're going to do it. I'm pretty sure we're going to run through the 100 copies. We're already at 60 plus down, but I did want to give everybody else who missed it last week a chance to buy in, so to speak, and start working on your dream. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Klink Show. Janet joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
How are you?
I love the show.
Thank you.
Great show. I'm thinking of doing some, just spending about $20,000 on some remodeling at my house. And I'm just wondering, is a HELOC, a home equity line of credit, because I could pay the cash for it, but I was also thinking maybe a home equity line of credit. Is that deductible, the interest on that deductible, the way a mortgage interest is deductible on your taxes?
It is with some limitations. So
okay.
If you're getting a home equity line of credit, I believe that it is deductible up to $100,000.
Oh, okay.
So if you are, and that changes per state. Like in Texas, I don't think home equity lines of credit are deductible at all. Not quite sure
I'm
why.
In Georgia.
Well, right, I know you are. So, but I believe it's, I believe it is up to $100,000. Now,
okay.
It could be, and I have to think about this, that for a while, and I think this changed, it was actually up to $1,000,001 for your primary residence and your home equity line of credit. But I think that may have changed over the last couple of years, and I have to go back and look with the taking back of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac under the fold of the government. They're still in conservatorship. That may have switched. So I will, in the upcoming commercial break, I will take a look and see, and if it has, I will let you know. But
okay,
in the meantime,
I'll ask my tax guy to make sure.
Definitely, always ask your tax guy. How much are you thinking about taking out in your home
equity?
Like
only about $20,000.
$20,000, absolutely not going to be a problem. You will be able to write it off. And then the only thing there would be if you earn too much money, all of those tax breaks get limited.
No, I don't make that much money.
All right. Well, then
I'm
you're
not in that range.
Then, Janet, I'm happy to say you're likely to be golden here.
Probably. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening to the show. Have a happy Memorial Day weekend. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Klink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Check back often for the weekend for breaking news, weather, and traffic. And join us for our Monday edition of Atlanta's Morning News. And Kirk Mellish's 5-day forecast. The days will be close to 90 next week on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
It's 11:25 on the Elise Klink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Lines are open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Holiday weekend, if you always want to call in and you're always worried about waiting online, today is a good day. Lines are a little bit open because it's everybody's out there barbecuing. Oh, which is what I wanted to ask you. All right, so I've decided to do something new this year for Memorial Day, and I've decided to try and smoke a brisket. So knowing that, many of you may not have listened years ago, but there was a Memorial Day weekend, or maybe it was 4th of July, and I was talking about grilling, and there was this long conversation that we had on the show with all kinds of listeners about the green egg. And at the time, I'd never heard of the green egg, which apparently was based in Atlanta, and a company based in Atlanta. It's become huge. My brother-in-law has a huge green egg now. In fact, I have a lot of friends who have it, but I had never heard of it at the time. And so the lines lit up with everybody telling me that I was actually missing this in my life. So I know that there are a lot of you out there who understand how to use the green egg, and you've probably smoked briskets before. So this is what I've decided to do for Memorial Day weekend. I bought 3 briskets. They're about 6.5 pounds each. I have a whole bunch of people coming over, and I'm trying to figure out how long it's going to take to actually smoke these briskets. So I keep reading that it's about an hour a pound, and I'm going to start super early, and I'm hoping to have them finished between 4 and 5. Everybody's coming over at 4. And I'm thinking that there'll be all kinds of other food just in case as a backup, because if I've never made something before and I make it, I want to have a sense of, you know, I'll still feed people other things. So if you have some suggestions on smoking brisket, I would deeply appreciate them. You can either call the show, 404-872-0750, and we'll have a little conversation about smoking briskets, or you can send email to questions@thinklink.com. And you can go to Twitter and you can send little 140-character suggestions there to @Glink. All kinds of ways to contact me today. But I would love some help from Team Brisket Atlanta, which I'm pretty sure is out there. So feel free to weigh in on the best ways for me to handle this so that I'm not embarrassed tomorrow afternoon. 404-872-0750. When we come back, unbelievably, mortgage interest rates are going in the exact opposite direction that every single expert had predicted earlier this year. I'm going to talk about that and how you can take advantage of it next on the Elise Kling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, this Memorial Day weekend on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 11:36 on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, this Memorial Day weekend on WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're talking about investing in real estate, mortgage interest rates, the home sales, and answering your questions about a wide range of topics related to money and real estate. 404-872-0750. Oh, and brisket. We're talking about brisket as well, if you'd like to weigh in on that. And you can also do that on Twitter as well. Ray joins us on the line from Johns Creek. Hi, Ray.
Hello. I've got a question. I'm totally disabled now, so I get money from Social Security, the VA, and from a long-term disability policy I paid for.
Are you you're a veteran?
Yes.
Well, my thanks to you and to everybody else this Memorial Day weekend for your service.
Thank you. And everybody should remember Memorial Day weekend, not for those of us who served, but those who died serving.
Yes.
My question is, I refinanced last September $137,000 of my loan at 3.75%. And I've got an equity line of about $51,000, and about 28.8 is locked at is variable at 2.99, and the balance of it is locked, I think it's 6% or 6.5%.
Okay.
As a disabled vet, I don't have to pay a VA funding fee. But my question is, we don't know if we want to stay in the house forever or if we're going to sell it and find something else, but because I've got that equity line out there, and as much as it is, are we better seeing if we can go ahead and redo the loan instead of just the streamline down at the current rates? And I've got other things going on from an accident that we may have money later, and my thought was that we should possibly take our home loan and continue to pay on it and use that money and investments for retirement, and use the money that we get from other things that are happening that hopefully we'll finish up to put into investments as well as pay off the rest of our bills.
Ray, how old are you?
I'm going to be 56 in June. Long-term disability policy will pay till I'm 65. Social Security disability pays indefinitely, as does my VA disability.
Okay, and so the VA disability and the Social Security disability, are those enough for you to live on?
My wife works as well, so if I pay off the rest of the debt with the exception of the home loan, yes.
Okay. So
I had a car wreck, and you know, hopefully those lawsuits will be getting settled, and we'll be getting a settlement from that.
Oh, I hope so. It sounds like you've had so much physical pain and physical suffering that it would be nice to know that you don't really have to worry about the rest of your life retirement. And so I hope that that's how that works out for you. You have, just to talk about your loan for a moment, you have a very cheap loan at 3.75%, and it won't get any cheaper if you do anything to that. The equity line, which is 2.99%.
Only on half of it.
Correct. I understand. 6.5%.
Right.
So 3 and 6.5%, you're about at 4.5% average.
Okay.
For your equity line. And for an equity line, that's pretty good. So that I don't think you're going to get better than that. So then the question is there an opportunity to combine the two and pay something between 3.75% and 4.5%, but closer to like 4%, you know, because you got to get down a little bit because 3.75% is so big. And the answer is I don't think there is an opportunity to do that, because the 30-year rate right now, you'd have to go to a 15-year rate. How long do you have left to pay off on your loans? Probably like 28 years, right?
Well, I just did a streamline through the VA in September, I think it was, so closer to 30.
Okay. So you've got 30 years to go, and I really can't see that you're going to get any better than 3.75%. So the piece that you really want to work on is the 6.5%, because interest rates are going to stay low for at least another couple of years. So your home equity line is going to stay low, the 2.99%. And since you've already done the streamline, are you underwater with these loans?
No. I know that it doesn't count for much, but I guess if Zillow says my house right now is worth about, I think, 250, 255.
Okay.
And if we were to sell, I've got to do a few things to the house. I need to paint it inside and out. I need to replace the deck and a garage door. So.
Okay. So that's somewhat minor, but maybe still $4,000 or $5,000 in total. Which is fine. But overall, you've got equity, which is great. So then the game would be, could you trade all of these loans in for a 15-year at 3.5%? Because that's the going rate. And I don't know if you can actually do that, because I don't know if you'll be able to qualify with your income. And you have your wife's income as well. But if you could, what that would allow you to do is you wrap it all in together, and you've moved from a 3.75% loan, which is what you just refinanced at, to 3.5%. So there's a little bit of a savings there. There's a little savings on the home equity line of credit. Unfortunately, because that rate would be higher, a little higher than what you're paying on half of the home equity loan, but lower on the rest, but you've compressed it from 30 years to 15 years, you have to see if the total payment would go up and by how much, and if that's going to be affordable for you.
Well, my income is about $6,000, and about $2,000 of it's taxable.
Uh-huh.
The rest of it is not. And miscellaneous other credit cards and things that are in my name, not including what's in my wife's name, is probably $35,000, $37,000.
You have another $37,000 in credit card debt?
Which I'm trying to hack away at as quickly as possible. Yes.
Got it. So I don't know if you'd qualify for that loan, but if you did, it should give you. Well, it may or may not give you any savings. So I don't know that you're actually in a better spot if you do that. So maybe the thing to do is to simply wait for this car crash money to come in, and then use that to immediately pay down the credit card debts, because that's got to be draining. How much is that draining each month? Those credit card debts have to be seriously high, I would think.
Well, they are. I mean, the one of them, which is the largest one, fortunately, is through USAA, so its interest rate's less than 10%. But
that's still 10%. Let's just say it's,
correct.
You know, it's still 10% on whatever that is. So
my thought was to try and pay off the credit card debt in the equity line, but leave the mortgage.
Yes, that's exactly what you should do. And if you can't pay off the whole equity line, pay off the piece that's at 6.5% for sure.
And the rest, and we're trying to decide, do we stay in our house or do we buy another house? Do you have a suggestion right now?
Well, let's talk about why you feel like you want a different house.
We're in a two-story house now.
Mm-hmm.
And in my wife's line of work, she sees people that never make it up to the second floor because of physical issues. And our master bedroom's on the second floor, so the thought process would be to have a house that would be one story and hopefully not in Fulton County and get rid of some of Fulton County tax.
Okay. So I get that. Does your disability prevent you from climbing stairs, or could it in the future?
It might in the future. It's somewhat painful with the hip sometimes going up and down the stairs. So it's...
Okay. So that's a great reason. It's probably the best reason to sell a house, is that you physically are uncomfortable living there and probably will get more uncomfortable as it goes along. So now the question is, do you sell now or do you wait a couple of years and sell in a couple of years? And I would say that you should probably start looking around. I would look for a foreclosure, because there are foreclosures out there that you could fix up or that is ready to be moved into. I would buy a ranch foreclosure in your neighborhood of choice, if you can find it, and hopefully for less money than $250,000 or whatever that, you know, you can get for your house. I mean, if you could find something for $200,000 and you sell, you get a new loan for 15 years at, you know, you'd be able to pay some of that in cash. You get a new loan for 15 years at 3.5%, so you're locking in really low. Everything else gets paid off. Your credit card debt is paid off. You're home free, and now the car money comes in, and that is for your future.
Where do you find the foreclosures? I hear people talking about them, but I've never really...
Well, I'm glad you asked, Ray. There is a website called HUD, H-U-D, right, for FHA foreclosures, or for HUD, Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUDHomeStore.com. HUDHomeStore.com is a website that's contracted with HUD to showcase all of the foreclosures, I believe, in the country, not just in Georgia. So you can go online and look for them, and they preference people who want to live in homes over people who want to invest in homes. You get like a two-week head start. You do need to work with an agent who's certified by HUD to help you actually submit your offer. So you'll have to look for that. But you could just go online now and take a look and see what homes are listed for sale. Start to identify, maybe you've already figured out what neighborhood you're interested in. Maybe you've even driven around and looked at the housing stock, and maybe this is a way for you to start to get yourself out of trouble, which would be great.
And if my current VA loan's only $135,000, I guess I could use the rest of my VA availability to try and get a second home, or can you only have one loan on a VA loan?
I believe you can only have one loan on a VA loan. But it doesn't matter, because you don't necessarily need a VA loan. Right, a conventional mortgage is really cheap right now at 3.5% for a 15-year. And if you sell this house, your current house, you'll be able to use your VA benefit again anyway.
And with my non-taxable and taxable income, I guess that makes it easier to qualify for a conventional loan also.
It does. You've got guaranteed income for life. Who doesn't like that?
Okay.
So I think you need to do some research. Like, I wouldn't put your house in the market today. I know you got some work to do anyway. But I would start to look online at HUDHomeStore.com and see what's out there, see what's going on in the neighborhood of choice, and try and figure out if this could be good. And then you're going to have to really map it out, because this is a lot of complicated moving pieces. And whatever happens, I don't want you to get caught in any number of traps that are out there. And I want you to make a smart move, because your next move, hopefully, will be your last move. And I want it to be a really successful one. Thanks so much for your call. And thanks for the reminder that Memorial Day is truly for those that we've lost. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment with more of the Elise Kling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
55 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time on WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Hey, Will joins us on the line. Hi, Will. Happy Memorial Day weekend.
Happy Memorial Day to you, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can I help today?
Wanted to ask you a question about buying a foreclosure and the viability of buying a foreclosure as a first home. I'm a carpenter and welder, and I can do plumbing and electrical, and I have a...
Wait a second. Can you come over to my house? Everybody needs somebody like that if you're a homeowner. In fact, I'm joking about coming over to my house, but my husband Sam is the most handy guy I know, and he has saved us in our house, I would say easily, hundreds of thousands of dollars over 20 years that we've lived here simply by being able to do a lot of that stuff, and he can't even, he's not a welder.
Well, I think we're a dying breed, so I think he's one to hold on to.
Okay. 25 years, I think I'm a little, you know, it's a little far gone for giving him up. But for buying a foreclosure, you know, the thing that scares a lot of people off is that it needs a lot of work. And the fact that you know how to do all of these things and that you do them as a trade is enormously helpful and is going to make a huge difference and make it a whole lot easier to buy a house because you're not going to be scared of fixing things that go wrong.
I actually enjoy it, yeah.
So you enjoy it. Okay, so we add another dimension on top of just the fact you're handy. So buying a foreclosure is a really interesting and smart thing to do when you go into it with your eyes open. And as I was saying online earlier on the air, that this HUDHomestore.com website is actually a really good place to start to look to see what's available and then go see some of those houses. And it takes the fear away from the idea that you're buying a foreclosure. I mean, what you're doing is buying a house that somebody else could no longer afford to maintain and keep. And it's still a house. And HUD foreclosures, right, FHA, loans that go bad, basically, those actually have to meet a certain basic standard before they'll sell them. And so that's even one more layer of feeling good about it that you could rely on, or you could actually just go and work with a real estate agent who specializes in foreclosures and short sales and see what's out there. But I think it's a really viable way for you to save money, get a house that you can build value into simply because you know how to do all that stuff. And I think it's a terrific idea.
And the biggest worry is that I don't know a lot about foreclosures, but I know that there's after a certain time of people not being able to pay their mortgage for whatever reason, they are forced by the bank to sell it. And so does that traditionally come along with kind of negligent maintenance and things like that?
Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. As I often say, if people had the money to pay their mortgage, they usually want to take care of the house. So sometimes those two things go hand in hand. But again, with a HUD foreclosure, you don't have to worry about it. But you being in the trade, you're going to know what's wrong with it. And you don't have to make an offer on a house if it's in such bad shape you're worried about serious structural problems. You need to go put together your team, figure out who you want to help. To check out my Intentional Investor series. I think it's going to really help you, Will, at thinklinkstore.com. All right, stay tuned. Be back in another hour, or for another hour. I'll be back in a few minutes with another hour of the Rebuilding America show on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of the Elise Link Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Lines are wide open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. The website, thinklink.com, thinkglink.com. If you're looking for the intentional investor, how to be wildly successful in real estate, which is 80% off at $75, you can go to thinklinkstore.com. Thinklinkstore.com. We've sold another 10 since the show started, so there's still 30 left. And when they're gone, they are gone. So at least for now, thinklinkstore.com. Use the code BUYNOW, B-U-Y-N-O-W, to get the discount. 404-872-0750, that's the number. I want to start talking about what's going on with new home sales and also mortgage interest rates. So, the beginning of the year, I talked to, I don't know how many experts. It must have been a half a dozen of the people that I really respect the most in terms of economists, people who are in the housing industry, somebody like Lawrence Yun, who's the He's a senior vice president, the chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, and people who've been guests on our show over the years, just really smart. And to a person, they all felt that mortgage interest rates would rise this year. And I thought they would as well. I mean, here we are in 2014, 7 years roughly after the start of the housing crisis, and we're clearly at a more mature point of the crisis, or at least everybody thought so, where it seemed to make sense that, well, mortgage interest rates are going to go up. There's going to be places in the world that are going to be better places to go and invest your money, and all of this is going to turn things around. And so what we saw at the beginning of the year was mortgage interest rate ticking up and up and up. And so I think we hit a high of like maybe 4.875. Okay, still nowhere near, you know, like 8% for a 30-year loan, but it was still 4.875, 4.75 for a 30-year loan. The strange thing was that jumbo loans, which are over 417,000, those rates were and continue to be about the same as a conventional rate, which is under that. And that's never happened. I can't even remember the last time that's happened. I don't know. In all these years, in these decades that I've been talking about and writing about real estate, I'm not sure it's ever happened. And here we are at a place where if you get a loan for $500,000, you're going to basically pay about the same as if you were getting a loan for $200,000. Excuse me. So we all watched mortgage interest rates start to tick up, and people started to come off the sidelines and buy houses. They were worried about interest rates going up. They were worried about that old crazy thing, hyperinflation, although we've seen no evidence of it in all these years. People saying hyperinflation, coming back, get your rate at now, all the rest. So a funny thing happened on the way to higher interest rates, which, by the way, were widely thought to be past 5% for a 30-year rate by this time, and certainly by the end of the year. And what's happened is that the 30-year mortgage interest rate has fallen back this week to 4.14%. I was going to say 4.25%, but it isn't even 4.25. It's 4.14%. And the week before, it was basically 3.99%. So what's going on about that, right? It's the fourth straight week that mortgage interest rates have fallen, and we're watching for a 15-year loan, as I said earlier on the show. The 15-year loans are 3.25%. 3.25% for a 15-year loan. Now, it's not as low as it was, which was 2.75% for a 15-year loan. But the difference, that half a point difference, is like nothing compared to what we used to see. So what's going on here? Because when you look at new home sales, or even existing home sales, they're not so good. Existing home sales were off a little bit. They were, again, expected to slow, but they're really kind of slow. New home sales picked up in April. They climbed about 6.4% from March to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 433,000, according to the Commerce Department. The prior month, we had new home sales at 407,000. So that was good. But we're showing that the rate of home purchases is slightly weaker than it was previously estimated. So, yes, they're building a few more houses, but people aren't necessarily buying them. So is it stalling? Are we seeing a stall, and that's why mortgage interest rates are going down? Or are we seeing this kind of second piece of the housing crisis come into play, where there are a lot of people who are still underwater, roughly 10 million. They can't sell unless they do a short sale. We also know that the IRS changed its law this year, the end of last year. So if you sell a short sale or a foreclosure and there's a deficiency, you're going to owe taxes on top of that. So now people Are people thinking about that before they sell, which would frankly be a really smart thing to do? Are we seeing just not enough, and this is something that the realtors keep saying, there's just not enough inventory. Well, we're seeing the inventory numbers go up a little bit. Who's not there? Who isn't buying homes? Who isn't putting the pressure on to continue to raise prices? We've seen home price moderating. It's sort of interesting. And the median price of a new home has gone up, but sales of new homes are down 4.2%. So builders are being super conservative. There are a lot fewer builders out there than there used to be. And I think home buyers are just not seeing what they want. Now, let's take a look at the first-time buyer market, which, by the way, the average age of first-time buyers has risen again up to about 3.32. It's up a little bit. But we're also seeing a lack of household formation. So that means that all these college kids who are graduating this year, most of them, a good number of them, are moving home. They're going home to their families, not out into the world to get jobs and to get their own apartments, and that leads to, you know, getting married and buying a house and all the rest. That's just not happening. They're not doing that. And it seems that, and we won't know this for maybe another 10 or 15 years, but it just seems that people are afraid. There has been such a disruption in the financial world and such a disruption to people's personal finances. The bankers have done fine. I don't know if you've noticed this, but all of them are making tens of millions of dollars again. It's kind of gross. But average people, you know, the other 99%, as we keep referring to them, not so much. And first-time jobs are hard to get. It's hard to wind up doing something you want to do. We've conditioned our children to do what they love. Well, what if they don't love it, or they can't find a job doing what they love, or they start out doing what they love and they don't like that and then they have to stay with it? How does that translate into feeling confident enough to buy a new car, rent an apartment? How do you get the money together for the down payment, the first and last month's rent, and all the rest? All of this, I think, plays into what's going on with the real estate market. In places where jobs are strong, and I hate to go back to this whole idea that you can't have a strong housing market without a strong jobs market, but it's really true. In places where the job market is super strong, like North Dakota, despite the weather, people are buying houses, right? The unemployment rate is like less than 3%. In other places where the unemployment rate, like in Chicago, is still above national levels, seriously above national levels, not so much. The housing market hasn't really recovered in fully. You're seeing homes come on the market and get sold, but not for huge premiums. You're not seeing the same bidding wars that you're seeing in other places around the country. And so mortgage interest rates are low because look at our stock market. It's still the place that people are investing money. Other places around the world have not become just kind of, I guess, enough of an attraction to counteract the risks that are there. And so there's still a flock to safety and a flock to credit and a flock to the country in which people feel like their investments are going to be safe and secure. And even if they don't give you much, they're going to be okay. So it's kind of interesting when you look at how it's all tied together and how people feel. Here we are, 6 years in. If you count 2008, it's the beginning of it. We're now 6 years in. We've had a very weak first quarter. I mean, functionally a 0% growth rate. We'll see what happens when you go back to it. And now we're moving into what should have been the strongest real estate market of the year, and not so much. People are strong in pockets, but overall, you're not seeing this huge national strength in numbers. So real estate is truly local, 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 but in a lot of locations, it's just not working out so well. That's an opportunity for you, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute. 404-872-0750. Lines are open. Happy to take your calls today. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB, 404-872-0750. I'm still taking brisket suggestions. I'm smoking my very first briskets tomorrow, and at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, on Twitter. I've had a bunch of suggestions, including going to YouTube. So if anybody's got any suggestions, please send them there. Happy to take them. And we've got some lines open. I'm happy to take your questions as well. 404-872-0750. David joins us on the line from Norcross. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi, Elise. In terms of the way housing conditions are now, I was wondering what the impact of that is on home improvement professionals. I know a lot of these small companies are like mom-and-pop operations, and that very few, like, remodeling projects bring 100, I don't think any of them other than staging brings 100% return on investment. I was talking to a guy at the grocery store who's in that business, and I asked him how's business. He said, not very good. And with the, you know, the purported comeback of housing, it seems like especially smaller home improvement companies aren't doing that well. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
You know, it's a great question, because I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what home improvements will do. And I do think that there are people who are taking on smaller projects, but there's more of doing it themselves. If you look at what's going on with Home Depot and Lowe's, they sort of had a resurgence over the last couple of years, and then I think it's died back a little bit. So there have been overall, and this is interesting too, the Architecture Billings Index, which is kind of a forward-looking index for architects for major renovation projects, has fallen and is now in the negative territory again. And it's fallen over the last 3 or 4 months. So I would say to you that I think that it's a sign of a larger problem, which is that people who lost jobs, there's still a huge number of people who have, you know, maybe we've just now gotten to the place where we've equaled the number of jobs created with the number of jobs that were lost, about 8 million. But there's still millions of people who are underemployed or have given up entirely, and that's why we've seen the unemployment rate go down. But I think that when you don't have a job and you're not making as much, fixing up your house is really out of the question, because what you're trying to do is just make your mortgage payments. And I think that may be where a lot of people are right now.
And with, you know, higher-end people that can afford these home improvements, there's only so many of them to go around. I mean, there are hundreds of small home improvement, you know, albeit mom-and-pop companies or maybe a little larger. There are people with higher-end houses that can afford, you know, kitchen remodels and bathroom remodels. But, I mean, you know, they're not going to be doing that every month. You know, at some point that runs out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. And I think that people are, I think there's a lot of notice and a lot of people who are would like that to be the case, that we're going to have, you know, a huge home improvement boom going on right now. But I don't think it's really true. I think we're seeing people fix up their homes to sell. I think we're seeing people do some little home improvement projects. But my sense of it is that we're not seeing a lot of people do it. At least people are not calling here or emailing me with questions about remodeling. Thanks for your call, David. 28 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. How can I help you today, this Memorial Day weekend? I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 12:36 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on WSB. It's Memorial Day weekend. And our thanks and just memories go to those who gave their lives in the service of this country, and also those who are the family members of those who gave their lives. When you lose someone you love, you know, it really helps, I think, to know that the thanks of the nation go with it. Maybe just a little. 404-872-0750-1800-WSB-TALK. We are talking today about mortgage interest rates and why they're going down. We just had a great question about what's going on with the home remodeling industry. And I did some research during the break. So just for Lowe's, which is trading around $47 a share, it was interesting. Lowe's just this week announced its first quarter earnings numbers. So remember that the first quarter, we saw basically no growth in the economy. It was reported it being a tenth of a percent. Could have just as easily been negative, plus or minus for the, you know, rate of error. But Lowe's reported its numbers, and the company's results showed continued growth, but they missed analysts' estimates. So the company reported $624 million in earnings, about 61 cents a share, versus a year ago, $540 million or 50 cents a share. But the share growth is because the company has been repurchasing its stock. It has a stock repurchase program. And over the last year, Lowe's has repurchased more than $3 billion, that's with a B, of its own stock and reduced the average number of shares outstanding by over 70 million. When you look at revenue growth, it was less impressive. First quarter numbers came in at $13.4 billion versus $13.1 billion in the first quarter of 2013. So some people consider that a solid number because a lot of retailers are experiencing weak growth, but it's not fabulous news, right? And it's interesting. I mean, it's obviously Lowe's is very successful. It's still a successful number, and they have a long-term track record of generating profits and growing its business and returning capital to shareholders and all that. And it has raised its dividend per share 51 years in a row. So that's great. But just, you know, understanding that, you know, who buys at Lowe's? Who buys at Home Depot? And it's primarily contractors and plumbers and people like you and me who are looking to do stuff in our house. And here we are, it's spring. I've been going and buying flowers for my garden. Boy, the winter has just killed my garden. Everything but the weeds. What is it about that? So we're going to spend some time today going and buying weed killer, probably at either Lowe's or Home Depot. They're both right next to each other. And there's certainly going to be a lot of that going on. But overall, I would say that, you know, the revenue numbers show that not as many people are going and doing things to their houses as at this point in, you know, the past life of the recession or the future life you would have liked to have seen. People are not as comfortable spending money, and money is still tight for a lot of families. And I think when you look deeper at the numbers, it starts to show up in places like this. Because you know what? As much as I want beautiful flowers for my garden, and as much as I bought a couple of rose bushes at Costco for, whatever, $15 or $18 versus the $25 or $30 they were selling for at Home Depot, I still haven't bought what I would normally buy. And I think a lot of people are in the same position. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Najma, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes.
Welcome to the program. You're calling from Jonesboro?
Yes.
Nice. How can I help you today?
I'm trying to purchase my first home. I've called around a few banks, and it seems that the lowest they go on a mortgage loan is $50,000. Some even tell me that the limit is $100,000.
Uh-huh.
And I want to find one for about 30 to 40 at the most.
So you're looking, have you found a house?
I haven't found a house, but I've seen some houses on the market that go that low. So I don't think I need a $50,000 loan.
Okay. So the problem that you're running into is that most banks find it really unprofitable to lend small amounts of money. So it's fantastic that you want to buy a house. The fact that you want to buy a house for $50,000 is great, but you're going to have to maybe find another way to finance it, or you're going to have to look a little harder for maybe a local lender that's going to portfolio the loan rather than selling it off to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
A local lender.
There are some local and regional lenders that it's called portfolio lending. And so they have loans. They don't resell them to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They keep them and they service them in their portfolio. Now, sometimes the interest rates in those loans are higher because, or you have to pay more in fees because they do have to make their money in some way, shape, or form, and sometimes not. So let me ask you some other questions. How much do you earn in a year? What's your income?
I did my taxes and I was at 50 a year.
50,000?
Yeah.
And are you self-employed?
Yes.
Okay. And how long have you been self-employed?
5 years.
Okay. So that's great because you need to show that you've had stable income for at least 2 full years if you're going to go apply for a mortgage.
I have that.
And you have that. That's great. Yeah. And are you looking for a place in which to conduct your business in addition to live?
No. Well, this will be your primary residence.
Okay. And you work elsewhere?
Yeah.
Okay. So the houses that you're looking for, if you're looking for a house at 30 or 50,000, if you'd called me about 3 or 4 years ago, there are a whole lot of houses at that price range. I think it's somewhat limited now.
Mm-hmm.
It's limited. Are you looking for, are you prepared for to buy a house like that that may need quite a lot of work? Like we had Will called earlier. He's a carpenter and a welder, and he is thinking about buying a foreclosure. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I've thought about that. Not so much work, but, maybe a little bit painting floors or something like that.
Okay. And so the houses that you're seeing out there, are they matching up with your idea of how much work needs to be done?
Yeah.
And how are you going to fund that work?
That will be just out of my pocket.
Okay, and do you have the cash available for that? Because you're also going to need cash for a down payment.
Yeah.
Okay. So the problem that you're really going to have is that it's really hard to get a big loan. So there's a possibility that if you got enough money and you can literally fund the house by yourself or borrow money from, if this is a possibility, parents or relative of some sort, and almost put the rest on your credit card, that may be an easier and ultimately less expensive solution than actually trying to find a bank. I think you should still find a bank, and I know there are people out there that will loan you $40,000,
mm-hmm.
but there are just not very many of them, and you're going to have to search. Now, the other thing you can do is go to, and this is the third time today I'm talking about this, HUDHomestore.com.
Say that again?
HUD. HUD, HUD Homes, which are FHA foreclosures, HUDHomestore.com. If you buy a home there, you may be able to get an FHA loan, even if the price of the property is super low.
Okay.
So I would look there as well. Now, to buy a home on HUDHomestore.com, and you could read up about it on my website at thinklink.com, you're going to need a HUD-certified housing real estate agent to make the offer for you. They don't let people do it on their own.
Okay.
The other thing you might want to look for, which is separate, is you might want to think about buying a house that is owner-funded. So the owner doesn't have a mortgage that has to be paid off, and they may be able to be the bank for you.
That's also.
Yeah, you should. I mean, it's a really smart move. It's just hard to find somebody who isn't underwater. Sometimes these homes that are priced at $50,000, the owners owe $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So have you looked, are you working with an agent?
Not right now. I've just been looking on the internet and calling around asking questions.
So I think you need more education.
Yeah.
I think you need to give yourself some education. So calling me was a good first choice, but I think you need to read about how the process works, and I've written a couple of books that might help you. One of them is called 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, and one is called Buy, Close, Move In, and it talks about buying houses and some of the different problems with them. But I think you also have to put together your team. I think everybody who buys real estate needs a team. So you need a real estate agent who specializes in your neighborhood, who specializes in foreclosures, who also works a lot with first-time homebuyers. And you're probably, if you buy a foreclosure or short sale, you may need a real estate attorney. You definitely are going to have to talk to your tax preparer So you understand how it's going to affect your income and your taxes. And you're going to have to just kind of, and obviously a mortgage lender if you can find one. So you probably, the agent may be able to lead you, the real estate agent, to a whole bunch of mortgage lenders who work in that neighborhood in that price range. And there may be mortgage bankers or brokers who do it as well. So you need to start availing yourself of the professional talent that's out there. And don't sign with the first agent you talk to. Talk to four or five. Drive around and take a look at whose names are on the signs, the for sale signs in the neighborhood, and what you're seeing online, and then go call them and set up an appointment and go to an interview and interview them about their experience and who they work with and the price points and all the rest, and try and start to put together the team that's going to help you accomplish your goal. Because I can tell you one thing, that you are never going to buy a house just by kind of looking around in the internet and randomly calling. You might actually fall into some sort of a huge hole where you end up buying a terrible house that's the wrong house for you and you get stuck and it becomes a money-losing situation, and I would hate that to be the case for you. When all you really need to do is put together a super smart team and just teach yourself about the process. And if you're in business for yourself, you're probably pretty good at teaching yourself things.
Okay.
So I want you to do that.
Okay. I've got it.
All right. Sounds like you've taken a lot of good notes.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let me know how it goes, okay? Call back and tell me how things are going, or check in at thinklink.com. You can send me an email there as well.
I sure will.
All right.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a good holiday weekend. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
You come again. 12:55 on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. 404-872-0750. I hope that everybody has a great Memorial Day weekend. As I said at the beginning of the show, I'm going to be making brisket, or at least trying to smoke it on my grill. We'll see how that goes. We have sold nearly another 20. So for those of you keeping track at home of the intentional investor, how to be wildly successful in real estate, there are still a bunch more that are available, and we'll let it go all the way through this week until we run up to the number. But if you are interested in buying real estate and investing, I want you to be intentional about it. I want you to think it through and understand that there are all kinds of obstacles in your path. Knowing what those obstacles are ahead of time, understanding where the money comes from, how you do it, how to be selective when choosing the property that you're going to buy so that it becomes a good experience and not a bad one. How to think through the problems. How to actually build the team. We just talked about team building and how important that is. I mean, it's important in business anyway, but the idea that there are teams that you can build to make your real estate investment go better, it's just a no-brainer. Everybody I talk to who's a successful real estate investor has a team that they can do it. And all you have to do, if you are interested in buying this and taking advantage of this information, is to go to my website, thinkglinkstore.com. You can't go to the regular site. Go to thinkglinkstore.com. At thinklinkstore.com, you'll see the Intentional Investor Series. Opt for the whole one. It's like $360. Use the code BUY now, BUYNOW, and you'll get 80% off. And it's as easy as that. If you're having trouble, you can email me at questions@thinklink.com, and I will check in occasionally when I'm not basting brisket or something like that. But it's getting yourself the information you need, reading it, understanding it, making a plan so that you go step by step by step. That's the way you get successful in anything, and it's certainly the way you get successful in buying investment real estate. So thinklinkstore.com, 80% off. We're doing it for the first 100. About 80 people have already bought, so there's 20 odd left. I don't know. I'm not looking at the exact number right now, but I want you to be one of them. thinklinkstore.com. Use the code BUY now. BUYNOW. It's 58 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. I hope that you all have a safe and happy rest of your Memorial Day weekend. I'll be back next Sunday with another edition of the show. I hope you'll join me so we can stay on top of all these things that matter so much to all of us every single day. Have a great week, everybody.